Well, or that was the Fox one.
That was the Fox one.
This Amateur Radio Roundtable is brought to you in part by ICOM America.
Hello and good evening to everybody out there in internet land or radio land. I'm Tom Medlin, WFIKUB, and this is Amateur Radio Roundtable. It's a show about ham radio, amateur radio. So if you're listening out there on international shortwave on 5130 kilohertz, you're listening on WBCQ, a world-famous station up in Monticello, Maine. If you have internet capability, feel free to join us, join the show. You can go to W5KUB.com, W5KUB.com. Send us an email to tom@W5KUB.com, and let us know where you are in the world and how you're hearing the show tonight, and we'd love to hear from you. Today is August 11th, and can't believe August is about half over already. Man, the time is flying when you're having fun.
Yeah, it really is.
When you're having fun, it's just really flying here. Let's see, what else do I need to talk about? Oh, the net tonight, the 40-meter net tonight. We have one every Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. Central. We didn't have too many check-ins tonight. Band wasn't that great, but we still had the net. We had a big storm that came through here about an hour before. I wasn't sure if I was going to do the net or not, but we didn't get hit by lightning or anything like that, so we're okay. I want to invite everybody out there to join our Facebook group. We've got a great ham radio Facebook group. We've got over 10,000 hams in that group now. It's called W5KUB. Just search for W5KUB and join that group, and it's just a great ham radio group to ask questions, post pictures, just about everything. Since yesterday, we've had 150 people join the group, mainly because of the word getting out about the balloon launch we did yesterday. So there's a lot of people interested in joining our Facebook group. So join our Facebook group. We'd love to have you. Let's see. What else can I tell you? Tonight we're going to do some shack pictures. I talked to Katie. She's not going to be able to make it tonight. Normally Katie would do the shack pictures. I'm going to try to do them for her, and I'm going to try to kind of be like her. If you didn't give me a description, I'm going to make up stuff. And Glenn Popiel's here, and Bill Brown's here. They're going to help me make up stuff. So you guys get ready to make up some good stuff here. So we're going to do that in just a minute. We'll do that segment first, but let me go around the room and first say hello to everybody. So let's jump over to our remotes and see if we can see who's out there. Looks like Glenn's there. Hey, Glenn, how you doing, man?
Hey, Tom, hanging in there. I was saying earlier my UPS died back in the other room, so I'm out here in the front room with the laptop. And unfortunately, this is the cat's table that the laptop's on, so we are sure to get photobombed and everything else.
Oh, but I thought maybe you were going to say that's the cat's laptop. Do they have their own laptop?
Well, it is, really, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you'd be amazed all the cat websites I had to shut down just to get on here. But, I had the UPS die in the other room, and the power's been glitchy with thunder and everything else, and anytime it glitches, basically that whole wall worth of power shuts down.
Yeah.
So I'm laptoping it tonight.
I thought we were going to lose power today. We had a few flickers here ourselves.
Yeah, that was some pretty rough stuff that came through this afternoon.
Yeah, and I think it's chasing our balloon. We'll let Bill talk about that a little later in the show there. Hey, Bill, how you doing, man? Is NASA still working down here, or they just
give up? Oh, yeah, we're busy as ever. In fact, we're doing great, right on schedule. So,
all right,
we're not letting things like this slow us down.
So you're still working from home, though, right?
Yes, the majority of us are. We have some people that are out there that has to, you know, do the testing, but a lot of it can be done remotely. So,
yeah. Okay, well, that's good. Well, I have found it, you know, when I was working at, we got just about the same amount of work done if we were working from home or, you know, in the office. I actually think I got more work done because I worked about 15, 16, 17 hours a day, you know, at home anyway. So I was always on the clock, so always working. But, yeah, you know, in this modern day teleconferencing, it's the way to go.
Yeah, the meetings work well. We use a little different platform than Zoom, but it's very similar to Zoom in function, and it works great. So, and I don't mind not having to drive that nasty commute to town and back.
Okay. Well, look, let's just jump right into it here. We told people we would do Shaq pictures tonight, so we do not want to let them down, so I'm gonna go over the Shaq pictures. Now, Bill and Glenn, you help me here. If you see something that you've got a good name for, you need to jump in here. I started out with a picture of my Shaq to get people to try to put some pictures in. We didn't get a lot of pictures, by the way, and that surprised me because a lot of people usually jump on this and. If we ask for pictures, you know, every month they always send in, you know, every month the same pictures. But I think we got a little different this time. So let me bring them up. All right. So I'm going to try to, well, that's centered good enough. Okay. That's a KUB station right there. Just a quick overview there. We got an old Alpha 86 amplifier there on the bottom left. I really love that amplifier. I bought that about a year ago here in at Memphis Hamfest, and it is so well built. It's continuous service. The switch on there, it's a continuous service from, you know, down at the low end to the high end there, and it is, you know, a 1500 watt continuous duty. Amplifier, put a brick on a key and walk away, and it's really, really a neat little amp here. Next to it there, on the bottom, I've got a 991, a Yaesu 991A. I really haven't turned it on in about a year and a half. I did use it a little bit. Next to that, over to the right, is a ICOM IC7610. That's my go-to radio right now. That I use, and then to the right of it is a ICOM 7300. When we go over to North Carolina or somewhere, I usually take that radio with me and throw a wire up at a tree and operate. And then right to the right of the 7300 is a Ameritron AL80B. That's a single 3-500 amplifier. It's a nice little amplifier, but I have to say there's a big difference between it and the Alpha there. Top shelf up there, we got an ICOM. I think that's an ID 8800 D-Star up there. I think that next one is a watt meter, a Ameritron watt meter. And then I've got, let's see, what else I got up there? I got a TS570 down there I use for remote base with a rig pie connected to it. And then the Astron 35 amp power supply there, and on top also a MFJ power supply that I use for the remote base. And then over on the other side of the room, on the way at the workbench, I've set up a little satellite station with a TS2000 there. I need to get back on satellite. Everything is working. I just haven't made any contact. So that's kind of my station. Let's go to the next person here, and let's see if I can figure this out. There's a club station. That's not a picture. All right, so here we've got, this is from N4MXZ. This is from Jim. And picture there, let's see, from left to right. He's got his Dell laptop there. Radiodity GD77DMRHT. I don't have one of those. An old Asden PC, 6000H, Mirage amplifier. His power supply there is a LK500. An Altec WM1, not sure what that is. Radio Shack field strength meter. Field strength meter is a neat little thing to have. I've been thinking about building one for the show here. A Nyviking MBV A-tuner. SDR play, RSP-1A with a homebrew preselector and LNA. And then over there on the right side, he's got a Flex 5000 transceiver there with a Shure PGA-48 microphone. And he's got a Dell Optiplex 7020 there. So it's a neat little station. You got a lot of stuff there, but it's kind of spread out, and it doesn't look crowded at all. Let's see what else we got here. Here's a station by Kristen Weed. That's KR1SS. And that's in their fifth-wheeler, their RV. So that's kind of neat to have all that radio equipment here in their fifth-wheeler there. But I guess they're out having a good time traveling the country and doing ham radio there. They got a ICOM 756 Pro for HF and 6 meters, an IC7000 for VHF and UHF, IC2730 for APRS, and a TRC 465 sideband 11 meter rig just because, period, yeah. They've got a ALS 500 amplifier there they use with the 756 Pro. And the shack there is fed by a 760-watt solar system with 660 amps of battery power. Ow. And that's in six-volt AGM GC2 batteries. So that's a KR1SS. Boy, it looks like they can have fun in that RV with that ham equipment.
Ain't that the truth?
Man, yeah. That kind of makes me want to go out and buy an RV now. Yeah.
It'd give me more room.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, let's see. Well, here's one that John Thompson sent in. This is his backyard shack for June VHF contest, he said. It's an FT897 with a LiPo battery there. Computer for logging and using FT8 there. And he's got a hamstick 6 meter dipole antenna there, so that's John, NU2H. And let's see if we got anybody else here. Yeah, we got another one here. All right, guys, here's where I'm going to need your help.
Oh yeah,
this is from Andy Kerr, K-E-I-R. Sorry, Andy, if I pronounced it right. Andy is down under. He's a VK2 AAK, and he's here at the show quite often. But let me tell you, my first impression is that is a beautiful shack. It's very straightforward and laid out, and it's very neat. I mean, there's not anything out of place there, and I like the way he's done it. But, okay, here we go, guys. I see right there in the top, that second shelf down on the end, I see a Kryptonite Paraphase Thunderbolt grease recycler. That's the main thing I can recognize.
Well, if you look there pretty much center on the left-hand table there, that looks like an actual monitor like the old Cushman's, but that's not a Cushman.
Yeah, yeah.
Then he's got, looks like a storage scope or a spectrum analyzer above that. And then, of course, another scope off to the far left. And, you know, down there on the bottom left, he's got some kind of rig.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that is. It's probably
looks familiar.
Yeah, it does.
Looks like a, I want to say an FT-450.
Yeah, looks like it. What do you think it is up on top? It looks like it's got 3 meters on it.
Oh, that's a Windjammer special. It lets you watch power in, power out, and upside down power.
Okay, I got you. I need to work on one of those, or maybe we can showcase one of those on a show later. Now, Andy, you see what's happening here. Now, you notice his clock has, what's his clock got? 4 o'clock there on his clock on the wall? I don't know. I don't know what time that really is here, but, you know, he's way down under. Let's see if there's anything else we can recognize there.
He's got a Dell laptop there.
I see the laptop. I see the laptop on the table there.
And that looks like a Yaesu speaker. So that says he's probably got one of the late model Yaesu rigs over there on the bottom right.
Okay, now, N7XDR says he sees a TS-2000. Now, I have a 2000. I don't recognize it. Let me look.
I don't see a 2000 anywhere there.
Well, let me
those
look,
are more
man.
Yaesus.
Well, it may be there, and I'm just not seeing it. Oh, man.
Well, he may have got the hideaway invisible camouflage paint option.
Yeah. I'll see it. Anybody else in the chat room will see anything that we've missed?
But I tell you what, that is one heck of a test equipment setup he's got on that left bench.
Yeah, yep.
That's what it is. That looks like a, it may be a 450, but probably not, that he's got flipped upside down that he's working on there.
Well, I don't know if it's upside down or not. I'm looking at the meter. Looks like the meter's on the top left here.
Well, if it's
but
top
you know what,
left,
we're talking down under, so that may be right. Everything may be backwards there.
Maybe upside down and backwards
it,
there.
It could be. All right.
They say the TS-2000 is in the middle of the right hand bench.
Middle of the right. I think I see it. Yep, I
yeah,
do see it.
I believe you're correct. It's stacked on top of something else.
Yeah, I see it. Good eye out there, Bruce, for checking that out. And, okay. I don't know if you can make it out or not, but you see the little reflection up there on one of the picture things on the wall?
Yeah.
I can make out barely. It looks like a kangaroo looking in the window. Right there. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's, Andy, we hope you did you right. You know, next time, give us more detail. I don't think there's any more. I think it's all of those today. All right. I told you it was going to be tough, man. I told you it was going to be tough. So, let's see. So we've done check pictures, and let me see. Bill's going to fill us in. I think on the QSO virtual ham fest here in a minute. Glenn's also a part of that. People may be wondering what I'm wearing. Let me show you my new mission patch here. Let me zoom in a little bit. There you go. There's my new mission patch. Most of you guys in Facebook that are following Facebook know what that is. That's the mission patch with Huey and Dewey on it. And we're giving those out to people on Facebook that are following the balloon here. All right, so let's do this. Bill, you want to jump in there and maybe tell us a little about a few things? First, let's talk about the QSO Virtual Ham Fest. And then let's get into some ballooning, okay? Are you there, Bill?
Yep.
All right.
We had a great conference. It was a virtual ham fest sponsored by QSO Today. And they really had a nice setup. They had an image of a ham fest that you could actually walk into the building and then exhibit hall, and then they for the vendors, they had vendor booths, and then they had an auditorium where you could go and watch quite a lineup of speakers. I know Glenn was a prominent speaker, and I was in, I gave a talk as well. And the really cool thing is, as opposed to regular HamFests, you could be anywhere in the world and attend the HamFest, and you didn't have to drive or fly hundreds and thousands of miles to get there or spend money on hotel rooms. So, and the conference was free.
Well, that's good.
So, and they gave away prizes. They're, I think they're still tallying the totals. They gave prizes based on the number of points accumulated for talking to vendors, going to talks, and a variety of other other things. So, but I understand they had well over 10,000 people attending, over 20,000 people.
14,000 actually showed up. 26,000 registered.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty impressive. And it was very nicely done. We all pre-recorded our talks, and so they would play the talk at the assigned time. And he had four tracks going, kind of staggered, so you could hop from one to the other and not miss out on too much. But the really neat thing about it is the site is still active, and you can go and watch all the talks, and it's still there until the first part of September. It's going to be up and running for 30 days, and I believe you can still go and check out the equipment at the different booths. And they had chat rooms where you could talk to the vendors and look at what kind of HamFest specials they had running and look at the equipment they had on display. So the only thing missing was a flea market and a food court.
Yeah, that's cool.
Everybody was complaining about the food court.
Of course, the food court probably would have been better to have a virtual reality donut or virtual reality sandwich than some of these HamFests I have been to, actually.
That's very
like
true.
Like the old Dayton HamVention.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a great time. Great questions were asked. So they recorded the sessions live. We uploaded a Zoom recorded PowerPoint, and then at the end, we had a live question and answer that we did a Zoom link to, and I think it went fairly smooth. I didn't see any big glitches, and having this done for the very first time in such a large scale, I thought it went very well. And there are a lot of talks that I always miss when I go to a HamFest, and I really would love to see them all, but there's just too much to do, particularly if you want to go and look at booths and go out in the flea market area.
Yeah.
So having the fact that this is still available to go and listen to the talks, you can actually listen to every talk if you want in the next month. So that is a really cool and neat feature. So I have, if I can show the screen, I can show you kind of what it looked like.
Sure.
If I could share the screen, Tom.
Oh, well, I gotta allow it, right?
He's gotta allow you.
Right.
All right, let me do this.
Now, while he's doing that, the Q&A sessions that they had after each presentation were recorded. They're currently editing those, and those will also be available for about 30 days once they get them edited and uploaded. And those
All
were
right.
the live session that you did after your presentation.
All right, you should be allowed to share.
Okay. I wanted to show you first, you can see that. That is a Ham Shack Deluxe.
Well, wait a minute. I'm not seeing it. I'm seeing a picture of Ham Radio today.
I'm seeing your 73 magazine.
Oh, yeah. Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's a Pete Sias's Ham Shack on the cover.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
That's a serious dish.
Now, let me just step in one second. There's a guy, his name was... Wilson here in Cargaville, that also has about a 40-foot dish in his backyard aimed up. He's passed away since then. It's still there. And he, back in the early days of NASA, he actually, I think, helped him or actually received many of the moon landings with that dish in his backyard.
Well, I wanted to mention this since we were talking about shack photos. This is not a ham shack. This is a ham house. This is actually his old house. Mm-hmm. And when he built his new house, he turned the one on the hill into a complete ham shack. Mm-hmm. And that dish is Van Allen, James Van Allen's original dish when they were doing the Van Allen radiation belt experiments.
Uh-huh.
And he went up to, I believe, University of Iowa, where this was still installed. And they gave him the whole kit and caboodle as long as he also took the rack mounts full of equipment along with him. And so he had two semi-trucks full of stuff that he drugged back to Salina, Kansas. And Pete's call is W0OY. And he's added to his ham house over the years. And now he has dozens of antenna towers, and that big old dish is still there, and it's on a battleship gun mount.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool.
So let me stop sharing that, and I'll show you if I can get to the actual website here. I wanted to show you, first of all, this was the, I'll show you this. This is what the question and answer screen looked like on the youth forum. And this was Carol Perry's youth forum. And she's WB2MGP. She's been teaching ham radio students for the past 30 years, and it actually had a class that was dedicated to teaching amateur radio in middle school. And so she holds a youth forum every year at the Dayton Hamvention and various ham fests. And this year, of course, she wasn't able to hold the youth forum, so she held it here at the QSO today. And this is an example of what the question and answer screen looked like after the end of the youth forum. And you can see all these aspiring young hams, and it was an inspiration to hear what aspect of amateur radio that they truly loved and how it's going to influence their future careers. And several of them, Audrey and Jack McElroy, they do amateur radio high altitude ballooning, and it's been a major influence in their career choices and college choices coming up. So these are all future engineers and rocket scientists in the works, and they were quite an inspiration to hear their stories. But if I can try, I'm going to try and show you how the screen looks like entering the QSO Today Hamfest. So I believe this was supposed to be out in the southwest somewhere in Arizona. I see some mesas and butte and red dirt.
The Painted Desert out in Arizona.
Oh, okay. So this is the virtual Hamfest, and you could click on the entrance, and you could go into the conference hall. And there was an introductory message. So it's just like going into a regular ham fest. There's an exhibit hall, auditorium, where you could actually go in and listen to talks. And it was very nicely done. And then you can click on the actual screen to see the list of speakers. And you can still do this and still go and listen to some of the talks. So you just go in and you hit play, and you can listen to all these talks. What track were you in, Glenn? Were you track 3 or 4?
4. On Sunday.
So we can find Glenn Popiel. What time? Let's see. Oh, there you are.
There I am.
And you can hit play. And this should be Glenn's Arduino.
Hello, and welcome to QSO Today, Virtual Ham Expo 2020.
There you go.
I'm Glenn Popiel, KW5GP, and I'm here today to present Welcome to the Arduino. But first, a little bit about myself. I'm a network engineer and technology consultant for the Mississippi Department of Education, and I work with
the
Mississippi School
just a really,
to help them with their infrastructure and
still,
technology.
Still
yeah,
streaming
you
really
need to amazing. Shut Glenn up a little bit there. There you
yeah.
Go.
Oh, I could go on
yeah,
for
I,
days.
I turned off.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing I like, I'm sorry, go ahead, Bill.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Well, I was going to say, one of the other things I really liked was that every vendor booth area had chat or multiple chat areas, like ARRL had one, Gigaparts had multiple ones, MFJ was in a section of Gigaparts, and you could just go into all of these chat rooms and have them all up simultaneously so you could gab with your buddies and friends that you hadn't seen, and a lot of my Dayton friends were there, and we got to at least catch up on things in all the chat rooms, and I was still able to watch presentations at the same time, so you could really multitask and not miss anything, really.
It was called the lobby. There was a QSO lobby, and you could just catch up to everybody. Plus, I don't know if you realized it, Glenn, you could send private messages to your friends and have private chats.
Oh, yeah. And I had several of those, including this guy that kept me up all hours of the night on Friday night.
Yeah, we could actually do a video chat with people, which Glenn and I did till all hours on Friday night.
Yeah. Oh, that was fun.
But it was well done. It was almost like being at a in-person HamFest, and the fact that you could chat with your friends and send and actually have a video conversation with them really made up for not having an in-person Dayton HamVention this year or Huntsville HamFest, and I've been missing seeing all my friends and out there, and this was a great way to reconnect with them, and plus a very wide range, a variety of some great talks. And like I say, they're still out there, so you can still watch Glenn's talk, which, by the way, was very informative, Glenn. Enjoyed your talk.
Well, I haven't attended any of it yet, but I think they missed one part. They didn't have the flea market stuff, the Boneyard, did they?
No, they talked about that, but it's just very difficult to come up with a safe and secure way of selling used equipment. You've got no way to test it, so you're strictly trusting them and, of course, the money exchange. And how do you know they're not selling you vaporware?
Yeah, well, I was more talking about just walking around and looking at it.
Oh,
not,
yeah.
You know, of course, when you buy that stuff outside, you're taking a chance. Everybody knows that for sure.
Yeah. But, I mean, for what they had, I thought the platform was extremely well done.
Yeah, it looks sweet.
And when you stop and figure, they had 14,000 people on that platform over 2 days. It didn't lag or feel slow or anything, really. I mean, it was quite a nice job they did with
mm-hmm.
that.
Yeah, I was very impressed with that that kind of load on it to work just phenomenally well, and there was no glitches in the Q&A systems, sessions or the talks. Just worked great.
Yeah, they said they had like 200 people come into my Q&A session, and it just rolled very, very smooth.
And I might mention that they for the Q&A sessions, they had volunteers to be the moderator, and what they would do is you would leave your question on a chat room window, and the moderators would read the question off to the presenter.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to work out pretty well. And then we would respond live on a Zoom video link, but just having the moderators read off the questions, that worked great. And it certainly, you know, we just had enough time to cover most of the questions. So we had about a 20-minute window for questions.
I even used one of my questions in your chat, in your Q&A.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, that's that was really interesting. I may have to take a look at that. They had asked me if I wanted to participate, but you know, being retired, I am so busy. I could not find the time. Where you know, you got you working guys, you can make time. Yeah. Hey.
Well, and you know, to me, you know, that was I think a lot of people were leery of the platform and how you can really do a ham fest in that environment. And so a lot of people did stay away just for that reason. Now, supposedly they're going to do this again in March, and they're going to take all of the lessons learned from this one and apply it to that one. So I would think that one is going to be even better than this one.
I'm sure it will be. All right. Well, all right. Hey, guys, let's move on. And we got a few more things to talk about. And we'll be right back here in just a second. Get out and be active with ICOM's new IC705 and its optional multifunction backpack. The IC705 is your perfect QRP rig, as you have base station features at the tip of your fingers in a portable package covering HF, 6 meters, 2 meters, and 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in at just over 2 pounds with RF direct sampling for most of the HF bands and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 megahertz. And it has a large 4.3-inch color touchscreen with a live band scope and waterfall. Additional features include 5 watts with the BP272, 10 watts with 13.8 volts, SSB, CW, AM, FM, as well as D-Star. It has a micro USB connector and Bluetooth. Integrated GPS with antenna and GPS logger. It has a micro SD card slot. The HM243 speaker mic comes standard, and it supports QRP operations. The perfect accessory is the optional backpack. It's the LC192. It has a special compartment for your IC705. Visit www.icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM radios. And don't forget, you should register for QSO Today's groundbreaking Virtual Ham Expo. This expo will be filled with virtual exhibits and great speakers, all from the convenience of your computer, tablet, or smartphone. Visit QSO Today, hamexpo.com to register.
LDG Electronics provides state-of-the-art antenna tuners for every amateur need, from QRP to QRO, fixed stations, portable and remote. An LDG tuner will match your radio to your antenna using our lightning-fast proprietary tuning algorithms. LDG is a family-owned and operated company dedicated to bringing innovative, quality products to the amateur market. All LDG products carry a full 2-year warranty that is fully transferable. Support is only a phone call or email away. We're always here to help you. Visit us on the web at ldgelectronics.com.
All right, and we are back here, and it's been an interesting day. Glenn, are you frozen? No, you're moving. I always have to check this out.
I'm just sitting still waiting to get photobombed by one of the demons.
Hey, as hot as it is here, I don't think anybody can get frozen, right?
No, sorry.
Let's talk a little about W5KUB21. It's our latest balloon project, and I know we've got some new people in the chat room tonight. I think they probably came here because of the balloon, possibly, or maybe even heard the net tonight. You know, we for the show, we had a goal to get a balloon around the world, and it took 9 attempts to do that. We crashed in China, and we crashed in the Sahara Desert. We crashed in Spain, Poland. I don't know where, in the ocean. I don't remember all where we crashed. But
you crashed off the west coast of Africa and the east coast of Japan.
That's true. I forgot about the Japan was our very first flight. Went down in a storm there. So and that was just a little simple party balloon that Bill launched for us. A single balloon, made it all the way to Japan there. Anyway, you know, we made three trips around the world, and the balloon finally gave it up and died on us. It went down in the cold waters in the Norwegian Sea between Greenland and Norway. But the ants were rescued, and they're actually on this next flight we launched yesterday. So we launched yesterday with an experiment. We weren't too concerned about going around the world again. We had actually two missions. Our primary mission was to see what we could do with a battery, to see if we could extend our tracking with a battery. And we knew it was going to be difficult, and it's not working great. So we're probably going to shift our mission now to our secondary mission, which is try to get around the world again. And here's a shot on APRS of where we are right now. We're just in Kentucky, I think. And, boy, we're moving really slow. We launched yesterday morning here out of Memphis area. And yesterday, after about 8 hours, we had traveled about 42 miles yesterday. I mean, it was going like nowhere fast. We picked up some distance overnight, and then today it's been moving along fairly good. We're up to about 25 miles per hour now. So you can see we're heading, look like northeast right now. I'm not sure where it's going to take us, but we sure hope that we can hit some jet stream winds here soon. So let me bring that shot back on here. If I can find the right mouse. There we go. All right, so that's kind of where we are right now. We're down at right about showtime tonight at 7:30 tonight. The battery actually went down to 3.3 volts, and that's where it cuts off. So no more tracking tonight until tomorrow morning when the sun comes up. But it's still flying. I really shouldn't admit this, but we should say we planned it this way, but we did not. It was actually a mistake. You know, everything is measured to the gram, and you watch your weight. And I mean, in building this thing, I was clipping wires, and I was clipping stuff off to save a tenth of a gram. And every little tenth of a gram I could cut off this thing helped me. So, you know, I had the antenna wound up on some cardboard, and we weighed the entire unit. We weighed the tracker and the solar panels and the support and the antennas. And the wire was wound on some little cardboard pieces, and that cardboard weighed 6 grams. So you subtract the 6 grams from your total weight, and you have the weight of your total payload. So it came in around 40. Which is heavy, very heavy, very, very heavy. I don't know anybody that's flying them that heavy. And when you subtract 6 from that, my payload was a very, very heavy 34 grams. Now, when we went out to fill it with hydrogen, we did a double check. First, let me back up. So 34 grams was the weight of the tracker, and we had calculated we wanted to add hydrogen, and the hydrogen would cover the 34, and then the hydrogen we'd put 6.5 more in, so we would have 6.5 grams of free lift. Okay, that's to play it safe. The 6.5 grams was to play it safe so your balloon doesn't explode and all that. So on filling up gas day, we do a measurement out there, and we lay it on the scales, and it comes in at 40. Or actually, it comes in at 39.5, but I'm going to say it comes in at 40. So I write that down, 40. And then we write down we want 6.5 grams of gas, so that's 40 plus 6.5. That's 46.5 grams of lift that we need. We forgot to subtract the 6 grams of the cardboard. So we put 46 grams of lift in that SBS balloon. Now, that means that we put about 12 grams of lift in it instead of 6.5. Now, that balloon has a certain capacity, and they recommend 8, so you don't blow the balloon up. That's the safest, they say. They do say it can handle maybe up to 12, but you're at the very limit. You're very limited of that balloon, and you're talking about, you know, expansion and balloon popping and all that stuff. So we launched with 12 grams of lift. Now, there's some advantages to 12 grams of lift. Your lift is what's going to lift you up out of these storms, and Bill's going to talk a minute about some thunderstorms we went over, but there were some pretty high storms, and you can be sucked down into those storms real easy, but the more lift you have, the more chance you have of staying up out of the storms. So that's one of the benefits of having 12 grams. The con is any second you might explode your balloon. So that's what we're dealing with right now, and we're dealing with heavy. We call it W5KUB-21 heavy. That's the name we're giving this one because it is really, really, really heavy. You know, we like to fly at maybe 12 grams total or 14 or 15 grams total. We're flying at 34 grams on this one just because the battery, the little small battery we put in here, weighs 12.6 grams. It weighs as much just about as the whole system. So that's kind of where we are. We're flying. It could go a month or two or three or a year. Who knows? And Bill, why don't you jump in here? And I'm concerned. I'm interested in stretching. Now, you think we fill that balloon out where we're actually stretching it now?
I think you're good. If you make it through 1 to 2 days without it popping, that's a good sign. And it probably has stretched the envelope enough that you're probably good. We'll see how it behaves if it actually hits some turbulence. But the good news with that much lift in it, it can handle turbulence a lot better than if you had less lift. And it'll also counteract any icing like you picked up on the last mission off of Greenland. You probably picked up a lot of ice, which ultimately brought them down off the coast of Norway there. So on your last flight. So I think we'll find out tomorrow how it handles if it encounters any thunderstorms. But if you were able to achieve a good float without bursting the balloon at that kind of lift, it will really perform well.
Well, we're hoping it's there tomorrow. Yeah.
Well, that was a question I was going to have is, does that extra 6 grams of lift help with the thunderstorms? And that's probably what saved us with the storms that came through here today. Kind of got us, you know, a little higher than we should have been.
Actually, the Sky Ant crew did a marvelous job keeping ahead of the thunderstorms and steering it away from them. They didn't encounter any storms today. The balloon headed into a region where there weren't any storms, but there were storms all around the region.
Well, I brought up here's a map here I brought up that's, I guess, present right now, and you can see the United States. And somewhere, if you can see the cursor, the balloon is, let's see, there's Tennessee.
It's up near Kentucky.
Yeah, there's Lexington right there. The balloon is in this area, and you can see these are cloud tops. I've got it set on cloud tops. Now, we're flying at about 40,000 feet. I'm going to click on this cloud top here, and that cloud top right there is 38,900. Look at that. And even east of us, when you go east of us, here's some clouds out here. There's 40,800. That's about what we're flying right there. So we got to get through this stuff. And
isn't there turbulence even above that, though?
Well, I don't know. You know, and let me show you another thing that we're facing here. So I'm going to go to wind, and I'm going to go with wind. And Of course, here's Memphis. Here's where we launched. And right now we're up in this area right here, up in Kentucky. If I click here to get wind, see the wind at that altitude is only 32 miles per hour. It's moving at 32 miles per hour. If we get a little higher up here, I don't know if you can see the arrow. Yeah, you can see the arrows on the show. These winds are taking this to the almost due east here. And but if we could get a little higher in this purple, see, we're up to 39 miles an hour. But if you can get up in the blue, look, we're talking 50 miles an hour. So if we can get up there and finally hit a jet stream somewhere, if you look at the white in the jet streams, these are like, there's 112 miles an hour in these. So there's some high-speed jets running out there, 107 miles an hour. But, down where we are and a little below, we're talking pretty slow speeds right now.
Well, that was one of the other things that I noticed is even on the latest track that I saw just before the show, is it's got a 50-50 split for going down south of the border here or the equator.
If you follow the wind at that altitude, we're flying, and it doesn't always match. I mean, I tracked out the curvature there, and it went down through the Gulf. It crossed Central America at the Panama Canal, and then it turned back, and it went across Central South America. And at that point, it was doing 100 miles an hour. Now, I don't know, Bill, how common is it for one to cross the equator?
It has happened. VK3YT and some of his balloon flights launched from Australia have actually gone as far north as Cuba and crossed just west of Peru and went up to Cuba and then went back south again down to South Africa. So it can definitely happen, but it's kind of rare and it's hard to do, particularly since in that area around the equatorial zone, you get a lot of very high thunderstorms, and they can wipe you out. So yeah. We had K6STS launched from Florida near Ocala a couple of months ago, and it went due south towards Venezuela, and it was last heard in Venezuela, but then not heard from again the next day or for the next days after that. And then probably 3 or 4 weeks after it was last heard, two stations in Ohio picked it up, and it's sitting in a tree on a mountaintop range in southern Venezuela. So obviously the thunderstorm got it, and they just got a lucky whisper hit as it was hanging up on this 6,000-foot-tall mountain range. And it's completely rugged, and there's no roads back in there, so yeah. Probably not going to get that one back. But if you show your go to your HabHub site,
okay.
Tom, you can click on the high split button and show
yeah.
the two possible prediction paths that the balloon could take.
Yep.
One sends it towards Spain, and the other one sends it down towards South America.
All right, so let me turn this off here. There we go. So this is HabHub. Let me zoom in or out a little bit. So, that looks closer to the coast than I thought it was. Maybe we moved a little today. Okay, so let me turn a high split on. All right, there's the predictions for this balloon. I don't know which one we're going to take. You got any thoughts?
It's 50-50, but it seems to be tracking the blue track. I ran in a prediction just manually, and it looks like it's trending. You see it's on the upper range of that.
Yeah,
so
it looks like
it's trending the blue track, which is what you want, and that'll head you towards Spain.
Yeah, unless it takes the
green track, you're going to South America.
Yeah, unless it takes the fork in the road,
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man. Okay. The others look pretty good. They're taking us out that way. I was going to look at a different one. I was looking at Ventuski here. This is another good site for weather and wind speed. Now, look at this. Now, I'm down at ground level. I'm at 30 feet off the ground, and you can see the speed here. Look out in the ocean. The wind speed is 3 miles an hour. That's pretty small, 3 miles an hour. So let me go up to our altitude where we're flying, which is about 12,000 meters. All right, so there now you should be able to see better. Look at this. Now, we are somewhere right. Well, we're about 25 miles. We're somewhere right in here. If we could just kind of jump up here. Look at there, 70 miles an hour right there. And that would put us in this, look, 80 miles an hour. There's 114 miles an hour right there. If we could somehow just move up a few miles and get into that, then we would probably...
You can see the possible fork there, right there where your cursor was, where it can make a choice between going up in those higher winds or going to the south.
Yeah. So it's going to be really interesting.
If you move it up a little bit, you can see the jet stream in the southern hemisphere.
Oh, man, it is. It's booking. I mean, in fact, it's doing good. Look, 120.
It's still winter there.
125 miles an hour?
Yeah. They've got those wonderful jet streams like we get during the winter, where you can go around the world in 11 days to 2 weeks.
Look at that, Bill, 168 miles an hour. You know, now, I think the fastest we've ever flown is about 120 or so, but look at this.
I've seen one that has been going, that went 210 miles an hour.
So,
but look over the Pacific. If you make it across the Atlantic, you're going to get into a bunch of loop patterns once again.
Yeah, and that's what happened to us before, yeah, as we came across...
But there's always a good jet stream across Asia and Kazakhstan and that area.
Yeah.
So they always seem to go towards Korea and Japan and China.
Yeah, and these are looking pretty good. There's 120 miles an hour, 130. And
this is summer, and the jet stream does weird things during the months of July and August and September.
I have noticed on nearly every flight that we've flown, we have crossed right through the Straits of Gibraltar, right there. That's where we cross. And then, like you say, we would usually hit Japan, which is right here. We've got a big circle there in Japan, so you're going to take the circle, or maybe you might not have to take it.
They've got to get that far north first. What you need to do, though, Tom, is take away their travel brochures, because they've obviously been looking at the
winter. That's right, man. I tell you. So
they want to go to Rio.
Anyway, hey, I just want to tell everybody on the show that Bill is the brains behind all this. Bill wrote most of the software that we're running on the tracker now. And Bill, your last changes, I think, did wonders for the drift that we were having. Although I did see some drift tonight. Did you see that earlier tonight?
Yeah, the...
I wonder what caused that, because it was zero drift, like, for 15 hours, and all of a sudden it hit. I think it hit after the sun went down.
I measured the drift here on my home station. What you'll see sometimes on Whisper is that people are showing drift when it actually is the drift in their home radio.
Mm.
So you have to find some of the stations that have very stable receive setups with temperature control, crystal oscillator references. I use a FunCube Dongle Pro Plus, which mm-hmm. does a great job on HF and has a TCXO reference, and it is rock stable. And I calibrated against a couple of known stations that are super stable, like K5XL. He's always rock stable and dead on, and K9AN. A few of those stations, I use that to make sure mine is dead on frequency. And you basically, during a transmission, It was rock stable. It drifted no more than half a hertz during every transmission. What you tended to see, however, as the sun got lower, the temperature got colder, and the overall frequency drifted down. Mm-hmm. So you went from about 148 hertz to 138. You drifted about 10 hertz over the course of 2 hours. But each transmission was still stable. It was a very slow drift. So I was very pleased with how it worked. I added code to turn the transmitter reference oscillator and the transmitter section on a minute before transmit, and I don't turn it off again until the end of the whole sequence, and that really stabilized
them. Yeah, that helps. Hey, here's for people that might – let's talk about – let's talk volume here. Now, I tell you, Bill, I could tell I got a little bit more hydrogen in here than our normal launch. Can you tell by looking at that?
Yeah, it does look a little more full, but do you have a video or some other photographs of the launch?
You know, we did it on two cameras, and one camera didn't get it at all because I think the person hit the stop button instead of the go button. I've got a video that I started on my camera after I let it go, so it's kind of a distance out. It's just not a very good video, but if you look at the video of the last launch, it's almost identical to this one, and that's on our website. In fact, I could pull it up. But I wanted to make notice of the amount of hydrogen here. I'm told, Bill, that the gas will double every 18,000 feet. So if that's true, at 18,000, that sucker's going to be half full. And at another 18,000, at 36, it's going to be almost full, I'm thinking. So I don't know. I'm a little worried about it. And guys, as small as the tracker is, about 1.6 grams, there's a lot I had to put with it to get all this together. And the next one we're going to fly is going to be much lighter. We're not going to go with the battery for sure. But by the time I added styrofoam to hold everything, I have regulators on there to regulate the power for the LiPo battery. We've got regulators in to cut that 4.2 volts down to 3.3 volts to power the tracker. And then we've got two cells. It takes quite a bit of current to run this, so we're running two 4.8 50 milliamp cells in parallel. 100 mils is what we're doing up there. I've got the launcher right here. I can bring it up real quick. And it looks just like this one. And by the way, anybody new that's tuned in, if you just go to W5KUB.com and click on Balloon here in the top menu. Oh, let's see, let me turn it on so you can see it. If you go to W5KUB.com and just click on Balloon up here, it gives you the options to easy track. You don't have to remember anything. Just click on the button. We've been up one day, 11 hours and 34 minutes. So that's us filling the balloon right there on the side. Let's see. You're not seeing it because, okay, you're not seeing it. Okay, previous mission. Okay, I'm going to show you the video here. It's almost identical, so let me run this video real short.
Hey, Tom, while you're doing that, there's a question here. In the chat room, is there any possibility that this upcoming storm across the Atlantic can have any effect on this current flight?
I would say sure, and Bill can talk about that. You know, we're going to try to fly above it, but you can only go so high. We'll talk about that in just a minute. So here's the launch. This is basically what it looks like as it takes off. That's 18.
All right. W5KUB-18, ninth attempt to go around the world. All right. Uh-oh.
You can tell.
Hey, do we want to walk out that way or not? Empty. We think we're okay? All right. It is.
Yeah, if I remember, that launch was a little sketchy. Pick up
too. We had a little bit more wind that day. We had about maybe a couple mile an hour wind, it actually started picking up.
All right, the wind has changed, so it's actually starting to pick up a little bit. It was about zero. Now it's probably 1 or 2 miles an hour. This balloon is really difficult to launch.
I think we got it. Get down stream from it.
All right, so we're about to turn it loose, so you'll see how easy it went up. But
what do you think, Yetta? We got enough clearance this way?
That field's about 100 acres out there. There it goes. We just turn loose, and then it's going to take the tracker up behind it about 20 feet below it. But there it goes. So really smooth. The takeoff yesterday, Bill, the takeoff yesterday was even smoother than this. It went up just so smooth, man. But... So that's what it looks like on takeoff. And you were going to make a comment or something, Bill?
You had beautiful weather there, and there were no clouds on both launches, I see. And where's your field at? That's a great location to fly from.
It's about 2 miles straight down the road from my house. It's probably a good 100 acres, and we have access to very good parking on it. In fact, yesterday there's a gravel road that actually goes straight down the middle of it. We should have drove down it yesterday, but we walked from the edge into the field. But it's probably 100 acres, and people don't realize, but this particular balloon, I think at 1 mile an hour you might need 1,000 feet to take off.
Well, it's about 300 feet for every mile or two of wind speed.
Wow.
I figure with about a 3-knot wind, you need about 300 to 400 feet clearance. So it's about 100 feet for every mile an hour.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. We also usually turn loose a couple little very, 5 cent party balloons just to get a look at where the wind's going, just to make sure it's not turning around on us and heading back toward power lines or something. So SBS launches have become very easy to do. Actually, you just got to remember, don't do it in the wind, don't do it in the rain, and don't do it while you're intoxicated, I guess. And after that, man, it all works pretty good.
Don't drink and balloon.
Yeah.
And Tom, did you see the Whisper map that showed where people were all receiving your signal from? I can show that real quick.
I've got it here. I can pull it up. I've got it right.
Do 24 hours on it.
Yeah. Let me pull it up. Pull the Whisper.
You got reports from Hawaii, Alaska.
You want to see the You want to see the map? Yeah, we'll do the map, and we'll see how people saw it here. Let me get the map up. I'll get it lined up here in a minute, where everybody can see it. That's not us, by the way, right there.
That's everyone.
That's everybody out there. Let's go to 20 meters is where we are.
And this is whispernet.org, WSPRNET.org. And you can show a map dedicated for one station. In this case, it's W5KUB. And then you can actually go to the database to see the actual reports.
Yeah, and I'm going to leave the nighttime turned off so it's not so dark here. We'll turn it on in a minute. But
and then you hit update, and then you can see the last 24 hours.
So let me see how I can do this. I just have to move something over a little here. I think if I do that, let it get that, and then we're going to just do a scroll in a little bit. So that's basically people that picked up and reported our position.
That's pretty good coverage for 10 milliwatts.
You know, hey, I noticed something tonight I don't understand. I want to show it to you, Bill. It's about Whisper. So let me show it to you. Let me find it first.
Bill, there's a question in the chat room. Does anybody, would you know of a Linux program similar to AutoRX that will pick up the whisper signal?
Well, I believe the WSJX, WSJT-X program will work on Linux. So
what about FLDigi?
I'm not sure. The fellow who wrote FLDigi lives just north of me, about 20 miles, so.
And the package manager lives here in South Haven.
Yeah. So, I'm not sure about DLFLDigi, but for Whisper, the WSJT-X program, I believe there is a Linux version. And then they have the original Whisper program, which is just WSPR.
All right, hey, Bill.
They're all downloadable on K1JT's website.
Bill, take a look at this. This is the gray line coming in tonight about 7:30.
That's pretty neat.
There's no transmissions going to New England, and it's usually just packed full up here, man. There's nothing.
Well, that just means that's the end of the world, and we've been spending it lifting
balloons. I think so. I don't understand that. You know, usually I thought the signals are going to follow gray line up and down there, but man.
The earth is flat, and that's the edge.
Yeah.
There.
That's the edge where it falls off there. Well,
yeah.
So, Bill, did we answer the question earlier? Somebody asked, what about the storms in the Atlantic that are coming up? Could they affect this?
You're going to be hopefully flying north of the hurricanes. However, if you take that southern track, you could head down into this, a lot of storms in the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean, and then you might run, if you take that southerly track, you might head directly into upcoming hurricane and tropical storms heading our way. But if you keep to the northern track, you're going to be above those. There are always storms in the Atlantic. Getting across the Atlantic and the Pacific are two of the hardest things to do on round-the-world balloons. But your odds are in your favor at your altitude, even with your heavy weight. You're flying about 2,500 to 3,000 feet lower than if you had a payload that was 15 grams. But you're still in a good range to stay above more storms.
Yeah, and my understanding is, from reading their literature, the higher free lift can help keep you from getting sucked down as easier than if you're running less lift.
It'll help with turbulence, and it'll also help with icing.
Help with icing, yeah. Well,
which is a big problem during the summer with all these storm tops that are close to where you're flying. You could collect some ice on the storm tops. It wouldn't be enough to take you down because you're high enough above the storm, but ice can accumulate, and it doesn't take much ice to counteract a few grams of lift.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Bill, there's a lot of people. Let's see, it's 9:15. I'm going to do this. Let me do this while we're at it. All right. You're going to have to scoot your head back just a little bit because I just put you on a split screen. I'm going to open a phone line in case there's some questions. There's a lot of interest in this. A lot of people want to do this and ask about doing it, and it's not as simple as just filling a balloon up and launching it. We've learned a lot over the past year or two working with you. And there's a wide range of cost. If you want to buy a tracker, probably the average price for a tracker out there is about $180. But then you've got the option, if you want to go with the cheap balloon, you can get a balloon for about $4. So, you know, I guess for the average person, probably, what do you think, Bill? The cheap route to go is going to be a little under $200?
balloon and tracker, if you fly in just a party balloon, you'll probably be around 100. And, well, I know in my case, when I send out one of my trackers, I include one of those 3-foot party balloons for 149 for the APRS, 159 for the Whisper version, ready to fly. The
Welcome, and thank you for choosing FreeConferenceCall.com. You're helping people around the world.
I'm sorry.
But so, if you go with the higher cost SBS 13 balloon, that's over $150 just for the balloon.
Yeah. Yeah, you're talking with the SBS, you're talking maybe $180. I mean, you got shipping and everything, and then you're probably going to end up buying a tracker, which is another $180. And then
$150.
So, you know, and then you got to get you some gas somewhere, which is not.
Well, the gas, fortunately, you only use 1 cubic foot of gas.
Right.
So we can buy this little tank from a welding supply house. I use a 40 cubic foot tank.
Yeah, and in our case, we had a tank we could swap. If we didn't have a tank we could swap in, it was going to cost another $100 for a tank. I don't know. Maybe there's different arrangements to be made, but.
Well, then I go to a welding supply shop, a little mom and pop welding supply shop, and they sell me a little 40 cubic foot tank, which is enough to do 10 SBS missions and probably about 30 or 40 of the smaller.
Now, is that tank, is that a tank they give you? Is it a disposable tank? What do they give you?
It's $10 a month to rent if you don't use it all up.
Okay, you're renting a tank. We had tanks, so it's just a matter of just swapping them. Yeah. So, you know, you're going to put a few $100 in a launch easy if you go. Now, the pros and cons are the small party balloon can make it around the world.
$4 a piece.
It's what?
They're $4 a piece.
Yeah. They can make it around the world. We've had them go as far as Poland and Japan. We've never made it. I know you have and others have made it. What are the odds? If you launch 10 of those party balloons, how many do you think are going to make it around the world out of 10?
Maybe one.
Yeah. And that's what I was saying. You know, that's the kind of the ratio I picked in our launches. And it was launch 9 before we made it around. So,
during the winter.
Yeah. Even with the expensive balloon, even with the $170 balloon, we've launched, there was just a race here a while back. Five of those were launched, Bill, a few weeks ago, and only one stayed up a couple of days, didn't it?
We actually launched 10 of them.
Yeah, and you know,
almost 3 weeks.
So I would suggest if a person wants to try this, start off with a cheaper balloon first instead of spending $180 for a balloon, because I think your first 5, 6, 7, 8 launches, it ain't going to go any further than a party balloon, to tell you the truth. We've launched.
Well, you can fly 2 party balloons and increase your odds.
Yep.
Because you'll fly about 3,000 feet higher. Joanne KM6BWB did that. And when we launched the Great Plains Super Launch and we had 10 of these flying, hers stayed up for 17 days, and she went from California all the way to Japan.
Yeah. All right. So I think we've got. It says that we have David on here, but I'm going to guess that's Russ. Are you there?
You did very well tonight, Tom. Thanks for thank you for sorting that one out.
Yeah, I know who you are now, man. My caller ID's got you.
Yeah, I got to change IDs or something.
Well, that's okay. That's okay.
Just a quick one. The Paul in the Balloon, of course. And Glenn and I want to make sure that our names or our call signs are on the balloon in case it comes down in a bad place.
Yeah, I was going to put your name on it. I was going to put your name over on it, so when it went down in Russia, they'd know who to contact.
Yeah, but we didn't do it.
Hey, that brings up a quick question. Hang on a second. Let me ask Bill. That brings up a quick question here. Bill, do you think the geofencing is working? Because I don't know if we've ever flown over North Korea and tested it.
Okay. Typically, the geofencing is necessary to avoid transmitting over the following regions. Yemen, North Korea. Obviously, we don't want to start World War III, and Great Britain. And Great Britain the United Kingdom. They basically have a law that you can't fly aerial ham radio. You can't use ham radio in an aircraft or a kite or a balloon. And I'm not sure of the reasoning behind that, but they're... it's been that way for many years, and they've never been able to change that law. So what the hams in the United Kingdom do, they have to fly license-free UHF transmitters on the 434 band, which over in Europe, that's a license-free band as well. You know, those key fobs that you use for wireless opening your car. They're 434 megahertz, which happens to be in the ham band, but as long as you don't run over 10 milliwatts, it's license free and they can use those. And
so I was just wondering how many
that in LoRa transmitters, and so that's primarily what they use in the United Kingdom.
I wonder how many people's cars got accidentally locked with that thing going over, you know, just.
Well, I once thought about transmitting. A multi-code garage door opening signal from 20 miles above the earth and seeing if I could get the entire Midwest, all their garage
doors open. Yeah. Well, that would be make the news, wouldn't it? That would make the news.
It would take some power to do because they aren't very sensitive receivers.
Well.
Hey, Tom, you guys are awesome. I just wanted to say that... I'm a member of the KC2RC Amateur Radio Club in Brooklyn, New York. And I'm in Iowa, but so I'm a faraway member. But I was telling them about your balloon, or about our balloon, I guess we could say. And I got so much interest in that, I tied up the net for probably 15, 20 minutes explaining what this was. And I give out your call sign, your website, and so they can go look. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Thursday they're going to have a lot more questions for me, so I've been copied down a lot of this stuff, too, but it's been watching the balloon. So just, you probably got a few more viewers and listeners because of that, and they're really interested in your balloon. I just want to call
Well, that's cool. There's a lot of interest out there, and we're glad to share it with people. It's a lot of fun.
But I did have a question on that, though, on, I think it was on Hamlib. It shows a little circle, like you get, like the ISS is coming over on my software. It shows you a circle where you can receive it or transmit to it. And then it's got a bigger circle. Do you know what those circles represent?
Yeah.
Yes.
Let me put them on here, and I should let Bill can tell us what they are. That's on APRS.
Okay. The large blue circle is the maximum RF range. That's the maximum range circle that's line of sight range. Of course, this is a whisper balloon, so if you're within that blue circle, you can pick it up as ground wave. And in fact, I picked it up even beyond the edge of that range circle, but it got pretty weak. But it was very strong when I was within that blue circle. Now, if you zoom in a little bit, Tom, that inner green circle, I believe it's the elevation of about 5 degrees above the horizon. Might be 10 degrees. Somewhere around 5 degrees, I believe, is if you're within that green circle, then the balloon has got some elevation angle to it, and I think it's 5 degrees.
Okay.
But that's what that is.
Okay, well, that helps. Because I know on IPRS, and I see Randy, AG7 or AGE is his prefix, K7RA. Can't think of his call sign now, but he's out in California, and he was picking you up at 2,000, a little over 2,000 miles away, which
you know it's
surprising. But I wondered what those circles were about.
Yeah, that's on the APRS. That's on the APRS map, and typically your range in APRS is only a few hundred miles, right, Bill?
Well, the range in APRS would be that blue circle. And maybe a little bit beyond if you have a really good antenna system, but that blue circle would be the maximum range for an APRS transmission. So, on Whisper, your HF, and you've got you can be heard thousands of miles away. So,
We've had some people pick us up 9,000 kilometers away in Australia. That's pretty good distance.
Okay. This, it's K7AG Randy, and he was picking up on APRS.
Randy was picking us up. He's also in our Facebook group.
Mm-hmm. Now, did I hear that you were from Iowa?
Yes.
We have an event called the Great Plains Super Launch. If you go to superlaunch.org, 2 years ago, we held the event in Pella, Iowa, near the Des Moines area, and we had balloon groups from all over the country attending that, and we did a huge multiple launch of 10 balloons, the big kind, the weather balloons, and then several of the Pico balloons that Tom has been flying. And so we kind of hop around the Great Plains states every year, although this next year's is going to be in Lafayette, Indiana area, and a year after that, I'm going to hold it here in Huntsville, Alabama.
We
generally do these events. We often go to Iowa for these.
Well, I got that one last year, and I was able to pick up a few balloons. I thought it was awesome, but thank you very much.
Yeah, it was.
Thank you.
Tell
me about those circles. I was kind of wondering about those.
It was supposed to be in Omaha this year, and we did it virtually online. And in fact, we streamed all the launches on a Zoom live stream, and we coordinated them to be launched pretty close to the same time from around the country. So. In fact, you go to superlaunch.org, there'll be links to the videos for those events.
We'll get over there, and I'll let other people know. Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
And Glenn, you're okay, too. We'll catch you later. Thanks.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
And here's a picture of what got us in trouble right there. That little 5 marked on that cardboard on the left and the little 1 marked on the cardboard on the right, man. Now, I won't say the cardboard caused a problem because we should have not let that happen, but this is not NASA and we didn't have a real man on there, so we're okay.
Now, wait a minute. That's just not right. We didn't have a real man, so now you're just depersonifying our ants. They're just cargo. That's not right.
Hey, man, guys, we love our ants right there. We love them. People are asking me why there's only 2 there now. Well, with our new computer automation in the balloon, it's just like wide body aircraft now. You don't need a navigator anymore. It only takes 2 crew members to fly it. So we've got 2 crew members aboard, and Louie is staying in, he's in mission control.
Oh, I thought he was the one that took the picture.
I'm not sure who took that picture, to tell you the truth. But he did take a lot of pictures. All right, well, guys, it's 9:30. It's probably about time to close down the show for tonight. And we had a good time. Thanks to everybody for joining us tonight. And, hey, for listening out there on International Shortwave, join us here again next Tuesday. Actually, next Wednesday at 0100 UTC. You can join us. If you're in the States, it's at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Tuesdays at W5KUB. Join us. Send us an email at tom@w5kub.com. If you're listening out there on shortwave, we'll say goodnight to everybody, and thanks for joining us tonight.
See y'all.